Blog Talk Radio.
Hour, and I'm your host, Polk Runyon. Now, tonight we're going to have a discussion on scrying and traveling in the spirit vision, the essential difference between these modes of visionary experience. And we'll set forth the ancient and modern philosophical and practical magical field theory, which is not any further out than some of the current theories in quantum physics. It will describe what happens in scrying, as in angelic crystal invocation and spirit evocation in mirrors, and we'll compare that to traveling in the spirit vision, as in astral projection, such as pathworkings and Enochian aether exploration. Now, we'll explain the importance of yoga and self-hypnosis in these techniques, and we'll answer any questions you have on this topic. So, as I said, tune in and you'll learn how to journey a million miles between your ears. Okay, now, first, let's cover a little background here. We did an earlier show on this same subject, and this is not a repeat of that, although there will be some overlap. What we're going to try to do, concentrate in this particular episode here, is to give you a practical feel for how this is actually done. And in order to do that, of course, we have to describe to you the framework in which we're doing it, and you know, and the philosophy behind it, and give you an idea of just where it is we're going to be going to and how we're going to get there. So let's first differentiate between these two particular methods here, scrying and as opposed to or in comparison to traveling in the spirit vision. Now, what do we mean by scrying? Well, what we mean by scrying is essentially your consciousness point stays with you. Most of us live, you know, our center point is with our eyes open when we're looking at something. Essentially, our center point is somewhere inside our head, behind our eyes. Most of us, and so in scrying. This is a visionary experience, which includes actual contact and EN and channeling. But your consciousness point essentially stays at home, and you look at what we call a conjuration device, which can either be, in the case of evocation, that can be a crystal ball, or it can be a black obsidian ball. It can be that great big amethyst that we have that's almost the size of a bowling ball that we use for Enochian aethers. Any point like that, or if it's evocation, then it would be a dark mirror, usually set in a triangle. And this your consciousness point stays, as I said, right basically where it's most at home, right behind your eyes. Now, you have a very powerful and very meaningful vision, and you can get in contact with these entities and without actually projecting your consciousness into the particular conjuration device, although that can also be done. But in most cases, scrying would be described as you're seeing something happening in the crystal. Of course, one of the things in the case of the crystal ball, you don't really have to see anything in the crystal ball. Angels are creatures of light, and so the crystal can and does acquire an aura and a halo. And then, as you're looking at it, it glows, and you feel this presence. And then the angel can speak inside your mind. And we like to refer to these channelings as knowings. You have a knowing. And so if we're sitting around the altar looking up at the crystal and the incense is rising and we see that glow and that halo and let's say I'm running the operation and I'll say, Frater Kalkus, does the angel speak through you? And then you look at it. And then it that opens the gate in your mind. And if there's a little voice in there, it doesn't have to be actually a voice that you think you hear, but if you have a knowing, in other words, the angel gives you a knowing. And then you can start giving us that knowing, you know. The angel is telling us that he's giving us his blessing and that his power is with us always, and whatever comes to mind to say if you are actually feel like it, you're getting the knowing. If not, you just say, not at this time, and we pass around. Now, this is scrying. And you could also, of course, if you're not really into the channeling process, you can also get the knowings and just remember them. Remember, of course, always that in a magical operation that these visions, as powerful and as meaningful as they may be, they're like dreams, and you better write them down very quickly after you get finished with the operation. And now that scrying also is the technique that we use in evocation, because the difference there is that we have the mirror, and we can use, as we do in Galatia, we can use your own reflection, which will, with the sigil imposed on it, and your own reflection will morph into, with the help of the sigil on the mirror and the smoke rising, your reflection will morph into the vision of the spirit. Now, back when they did this, back in the Middle Ages, they rationalized this by saying that a mist formed between the mirror and the receiver, and that the vision of the spirit appeared on the mist. But that's not really what happens. What really happens is that your eyes get tired in the dim light, and this starts to distort. And the combination of the sigil on the mirror and your and the evocation of the spirit is what changes the reflection that you're seeing into the vision of the spirit. That's what actually happens. But this is still a scrying technique, because your consciousness is still located back behind your eyes, and the spirit, even contained in the triangle now, can't be, according to the laws of the triangle, the spirit can't get out. You know, has to stay there in the triangle, and yet the spirit can speak through you, the spirit in the mirror. And if you've done yourself hypnosis training, you've done your yoga training, well, that's going to happen. If I'm the operator's behind you, or if you're doing a solo operation, you can ask yourself. You can ask the spirit in your own voice, and you say, "Will you give us an oracle?" And the spirit will perhaps, if you're really into trance, and you really got this thing going, the spirit's liable to say, yes, that will give you an oracle. I'll tell you that right now you're looking forward to a very prosperous year, you know, or something like that. And I may even use it. I may even do that. I mean, I have this, you know, when I get Ball's kind of gruff, you know, so when I get myself into a real trance and I get down there all by myself down in the temple and I get Ball in the mirror and Ball says, that's what you're going to do. He'll make me change my voice when I do that. And I, sounds like you're a little crazy. Well, maybe we are. You know, I've often said that magic is kind of a controlled insanity. but then again, on the other hand, as long as we keep it under control, I think we're going to be okay. But this is the scrying procedure. Even if we get into actual channeling, and that's the case. Now, this can also get into another kind of thing. We don't do this very much anymore. We used to, way, way back in the old days, back in the 1970s, when everybody was really freaking out and we're doing all kinds of crazy things. We used to, get under the big hanging mirror. You've seen it in our videos. You've seen the suspended mirror. It's convex, and it's about 2 feet in diameter. It's convex, and we get under this. We use this all the way. I'll be talking about this too, and for astral projection. But we also would put someone under it, lay them on the triangle instead of a mirror, have them looking up into the mirror, put the sigil of the spirit, and then. And then we would very sonorously and very much rub them with warm oil. We'd massage them while they're looking up into the mirror. And this became what we used to call a possession operation. Now, that sounded a little bit dangerous, and so we changed it to assumption of goddess form or assumption of god form. And it was a combination of mesmerism and scrying, and they would become, you know, really deeply into taking on the personality of the god form or goddess form. Now, we don't do this anymore as a group operation anymore. However, we have, if you remember the. If you remember our show on the Hieros Gamos, you can use this technique for the Hieros Gamos, for the Great Rite, and in which you get a couple and you would help her become the goddess Astarte, and then she would help you become the god Baal, and then you would do your Hieros Gamos, and so it works very well in that regard. And this is like this would be like in Voodoo, you know. Remember, we have the voodoo story, like the Papaloi and the Mambo get out there, and the Papaloi he becomes Ogun Badagris, and she becomes Urzuli, and the two of them get together. But they're both being horsed by the goddess, and they get together and they have a whopper of a magical child. So that's that works. But still, in a way, we're still working off of the scrying technique. In other words, even though we're bringing the god or the goddess into us completely in this particular instance, we're still, consciousness point is still, it's still basically inside us. Now this whole idea of consciousness point here, consciousness point is very, very important in this whole business. And I know I get occasionally people, even people very close to me, say, oh, come on, this hermetic magic is too much of a head trip, you know. Well, yeah, maybe it is. However, if you really, really understand this consciousness point thing, and it does take a little head bending to grasp it, if you really understand this consciousness point thing, you can do some very dynamic, very powerful things with it. And so forgive us being intellectual to this extent, because the more you really grasp the concept of consciousness and the consciousness point, the more powerful your magic will be, and the more powerful that you will know it will be, because you will understand this. Now, let me back up to Empedocles and back in 500 BC, and remember now, everything in the universe is air, fire, water, love, strife, and consciousness. Okay? That's one of the big things in ancient Greek philosophy. Now, the Egyptians understood it, but they didn't put it into philosophical terms. They understood it because the Greeks learned a lot from the Egyptians in this sense, that the Egyptians had the concept of the different levels of the soul and the different aspects of the soul. The Greeks then became fascinated with the idea of individual consciousness. And they realized at this point that individual consciousness is the center of the universe. And this, of course, is the big secret, one of the big secrets behind Hermetic philosophy. This is one of the things that makes Hermetic magic really go. This is where we get as above, so below, as within, so without, as above, so below, with the tree of life inside yourself and the tree of life representing the whole universe. You are the center of the universe. Yes, your consciousness point. And the reason is, of course, is that your consciousness point is the only consciousness point. There is no other consciousness point. You're not inside anybody else's head, unless you want to be. I mean, you're perceiving. So it's all subject-object. Now, the universe, and I'm going to borrow a little bit from my esteemed colleague, Gerald Schuller, whose book, Enochian Physics, by the way, if you can find a copy of it, Gerald is a physicist, and I'm going to borrow a little bit from him. Gerald points out that the universe is infinite. It goes on forever. So if it goes on forever, anywhere you are is the center of the universe. If you are there, your consciousness point is the center of the universe. Now, once you grasp that you are unique, because you're the only consciousness you know about. I mean, you could assume that I have a consciousness, and you could assume that your brother has a consciousness, and your wife has a consciousness. I don't know, maybe your wife doesn't have a consciousness, but you know, you can assume that you have a consciousness. And even your puppy has a consciousness, even though the puppy will never be aware of it. I mean, he'll never be aware that his consciousness is special. Although sometimes I wonder about cats, though. You know, there's an old joke about the dog and the cat are talking, and the dog says, "Oh, my master, he feeds me, gives me a place to sleep, and he protects me, and he takes care of me. He must be God." And the cat says, "Oh, I am a human being that I live with that does all those things. I must be God." So maybe cats do have it. But you have this very special, special consciousness. It's very special. And once you become aware of that, and once you become aware that that consciousness point is the center of the universe, then what can you do with it? Well, if it's the center of the universe, that means that if you could move it, anywhere you move it to is going to be the center of the universe. So all you have to do, really, and this is kind of a conundrum here, you say, well, okay, well, I'm the center of the universe, and I think I'd rather move my center of the universe out to the Pleiades or something like that, and that'll be the center of the universe, and we'll see what's going on out there, and you can do it. And that sounds strange, but that's That's kind of the way it works. Now, we actually spend a lot of taxpayers' money to prove this. And so you know, and it isn't just what we learn in remote viewing or all that. It's also one of the theories. I think maybe some of you that are into physics, you probably heard of the holographic universe theory and all this. This is theories of the Kabbalah and Theosophy are now they're being taken seriously by our quantum physicists, and some of the theories in quantum physics are just as far out, if not further. So, the consciousness point, your consciousness point as the magician, when you're in the center of the circle, that's the center of the universe. That's what the magical circle represents. It represents the universe. You, as the magician in the center, you represent God, because wherever, you know, God is at the center of the universe, and God is in you, and your consciousness point is there, and so you can either bring, in the case of scrying, you can bring anything to you, which you do, or in the case of traveling in the spirit vision, you can take that consciousness point and send it out. Like I say, you can bring things to you, or bring places to you, or you can take your consciousness point and go out to them. Now, there's an old hippie joke. What was it about the two hippies and we're talking, and one of them says, "Man, I gotta fly to New York." And the other one says, "Oh, no, man, don't fly to New York. Just send for it." Yeah, just send for it. To the Tibetan Buddhist, Shambhala, the mystical city of Shambhala, is just as real as Los Angeles. Even when he's sitting in the middle of Los Angeles, it's still just as real. So the difference here is in moving the consciousness point. Now, obviously, traveling in the spirit vision is a bit more difficult than the scrying techniques. So how do we do it? How do we actually get this consciousness point to move? And how do we get it out of our body? And how do we get it to move? How do we do it? First, before we get too far into that, I want to lay some groundwork here on the astral plane, the etheric plane, the astral plane, the mental plane, the spiritual plane, and all these different so-called planes. This derives from Theosophy, and I have to admit, and I'm not ashamed to admit, that I stayed away from Theosophy for about 30 years. And the reason why I did was that way back when I first got started in magic, there were two systems besides the Western system that I was studying. One of them, of course, we discussed the other night, and that was Afro-Caribbean Voodoo, which I learned a lot from. But the other one, the one that I was really, really doing a lot of reading on, was the Evans Wentz series on Tibetan Tantric Buddhism. And I tried, at the same time I was studying Tibetan Tantric Buddhism, I tried studying the Theosophical material. And, oh my gosh, Helena Blavatsky was saying that this philosophy, this philosophy, these methods, these techniques, and all the stuff that she was coming up with, or the Mahatmas were coming up with, was coming out of Tibet. And I knew that it wasn't coming out of Tibet, because I was sitting I was reading Dawa Summed Up, and I was reading Yevon's Wentz's commentaries and Dawa Summed Up's translations of actual Tibetan Buddhist practice. And I knew very well that these so-called Tibetan Mahatmas were not Tibetan Mahatmas at all. I knew that. So I just stayed away from theosophy. I just thought, oh, this is. Well, that was a mistake. And one of the reasons why it was a mistake on my part, although, you know, so I concentrated on Kabbalah and I concentrated on, you know, and yet I still ended up doing a lot of the theosophical stuff anyway, because it made such a tremendous impression on Western occultism that there was no avoiding it. I mean, but I still didn't like it, and I didn't want to get into it for that reason. Well, that finally changed when I discovered a researcher by the name of K. Paul Johnson wrote a very, very, very fascinating book called The Secret The Masters Revealed by K. Paul Johnson. And basically what he pointed out was is that these two Mahatmas that were giving Blavatsky her information, and they were also sponsoring her too to what would amount to several million dollars. They weren't Tibetans. They were Sikh Sant gurus. Now, Sikh Sant is the religion of the Sikhs, by the way, and it's about 500-600 years old, and it is a very, very advanced, derives to some degree from Hinduism, and it contains some aspects of Buddhism, but it is its own system. This is what these two fellows who call themselves Murya and Kuthumi, this is what they were into. They were Sikh Sant gurus. One of them was the Maharaja of Kashmir. The other guy was his brother-in-law. And they were so afraid that the British Raj would come after them and perhaps invade their Kashmir or something, right? That they wanted Blavatsky to move them into either, you know, into Afghanistan or Tibet. So she moved them into Tibet, and I guess that's where they felt they were the safest to say they were coming from there. And so once I understood that, I thought, well, wait a minute now. Now, Sikh Sant's a very powerful, very, very valid system. And of course, I already knew we got our pathworking system. One of our guys studied with Kapal Singh, who is a Sikh Sant guru, and that's where our pathworking system came from. It's where Paul Twitchell's Ekankar came from, too. So I went, wait a minute now. I got to give maybe this theosophy a second look, you know. And, of course, I've been, as I said, naturally, you can't avoid it. I've been using all kinds of their techniques that had filtered through and we'd used them. But now I have a much, much more, positive attitude toward the theosophical material. Now, that said, the theosophical breakdown of the various planes is basically what we use. I mean, it's what we use in Western occultism. It does derive originally from Sikh Sant. A little side note on that, there's a Sikh Sant organization called the Eureka Society that you might want to look up. They are the spiritual backers behind another Mount Shasta film, which just came out recently. It's called Dreams Awake, and that's their secret. Their secret key is the Eureka Society. Like, of course, our Beyond the Mirio is up in Mount Shasta, and ours is the Church of Hermetic Sciences. So they've got a little They got a little promo for the Eureka Society and Dreams Awake. You might want to give that a look. It's an interesting film. But the Sikhsant mystical practices are very good, and they're very, very advanced, and that's what's behind, primarily behind the theosophical concept of the astral plane, the etheric plane, the astral plane, and the mental planes, and the spiritual plane. Now, also too, I'd like to mention that Gerald Schuller, who's written several very, very good books on Enochian, he's a theosophist, and so he takes a theosophical approach to the Enochian aether system, which we use. And that, so that makes for another reason why we should really consider. In fact, if you're going to work on the inner planes, I think that embracing the theosophical concepts are a good idea. Now, what I'm looking at in that regard here, back in 1927, theosophist Colonel A.E. Powell, Lieutenant Colonel A.E. Powell, published a series of books on these planes. He has the etheric double, the astral body, the mental body, the causal body, and the solar system. And all of these are back in print. And they'll give you a complete, or as complete as Powell could get from culling all these theosophical writings together, a complete background on their ideas of these planes. Now, certain things, of course, since the 1920s and theosophy, and so we found out a few things that about this that. Especially after all of the remote viewing work and what have you, and Monroe and Monroe's work and whatever. We found out a lot of things about the astral and the various planes that we could correct. We can correct Colonel Powell somewhat. Now, a couple of things that you don't have to worry about. You don't have to worry about a silver cord. You know, you don't need to drag a silver cord behind you when you go out on the astral. You can if you want to. They actually thought that when you made an astral projection, in other words, an OOBE, out-of-body experience, and you took your consciousness point, your astral body, that what you were doing was you were taking your whole astral body, the spiritual matrix, and you were taking this out, and this is like your soul and your consciousness and everything is going out, and you're leaving your body in a state of almost inert trance. And good heavens, if your mother comes in and tells you that the mailman's here and you're going to die if she touches you, or you're going to get jerked back, the silver cord's going to pull you back like a rubber band, and you're going to go slamming in, and you're jumping up and knock the cookies out of mom's hand and everything. I mean, this is all, no, this is not going to happen, and you don't have to worry about this. We've spent a lot of time and effort and taxpayers' money and all that to prove that that doesn't necessarily happen. So, like I said, you can have a silver cord if you want one. If you really want to have one, go ahead and have a silver cord. It makes you feel better, but you don't really need one. Now, the other thing too about the there's a lot of things that they said about the astral originally that we found out aren't necessarily true. Can be if you want them to be. One of the things is the astral plane. We shouldn't really call these states planes, and this refers to the Enochian aethers also. We shouldn't call them planes. State is a better term. The reason is that these different and even levels is a bad term to use. They're states. And I think it's an oversimplification, but let's just say that there are higher and lower vibrations, rates of vibration, rates of frequency, rates of like a wave. They're invisible. They're all right here. I mean, you're not rising on the planes, but they use that expression. You're rising on the planes. Well, you're not really, because the higher planes are all right with, you know, spatially, they're all together. I mean, and they go to the other end of the universe too, if the universe has another end. I mean, they have different levels and frequencies of vibration, different levels and frequencies of I don't even want to use the term solidity. Let's say vibratory levels. And this means that you can have a whole world just as real in its own way as the world that we're in right now, and this can be passing through you and all around you at the same time. It's just that you can't see it and you can't feel it because it's at a much higher or lower rate of vibration. Now, we use in one of our path workings, we're down underground talking to the gnomes, you know, the creatures, the elemental creatures of the earth. Okay, while the gnomes down, the gnomes are moving at a much, 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 much slower rate than we are, because you know, they live in the rocks, and how long does it take a rock to form? Well, so if you want to talk to the gnomes, you got to really slow yourself down to gnome time. Yeah, these different levels, or dot levels, they should be referred to as states, and yet we continually call them planes, the astral plane, the mental plane, and all that. Now, one of the things that we need to do, and in order to travel in the spirit vision, we need to be able to move the consciousness point. Now, let me point this out, and I'm not even sure if I was an Eastern type instructor, I wouldn't mention this, but I'm mentioning this to Western people who I think perhaps it'll make it easier for a Western person to swallow this, rather than for me to just tell you that you're going to move your consciousness point to the other end of the universe and all the rest of that. No. The other end of the universe is already here. And you're not really in the sense of this particular plane or state that you're in. Your consciousness isn't moving. But what you're going to do is, you are going to, in the act of moving your kind, you're going to go into another plane without consciousness. And because the center of the universe is anywhere you want it to be, that's where you're going to be. And so it is necessary for us to get our consciousness point to move in our own perception. We need to be able to do that. We have to be able to do this. And so the best way that we found to do this, and here we are falling back on our Tibetan training again, as you remember, Shorsha Shot, myself and several of our friends from the Gardnerian group, we went through over a year of sitting with the Sakya Red Hat Buddhists doing the Vajrayogini program and some other programs too. And we really learned a lot of wonderful techniques from them. And one of the techniques, of course, is to move your consciousness inside your body. And this is another reason why Laya Yoga, or the yoga of the psychic centers, is very, very important. It's very important in magic. It's and the movement of your consciousness body, traveling in the spirit vision. This is a very, very important aspect of magic. But, and, of course, it depends upon your ability to move this consciousness point. So, we bring down power. We sit in a sauna. We bring down celestial power. Bring it all the way down to our tailbone and pinch our tail together and shoot that dragon up and then bring that consciousness point all the way up. Now the way that you do this and do it very effectively is to make yourself huge. I mean, really big. And you do this by looking upward with your closed eyes in the asana, sitting, and just imagine yourself and declare it, you know, vocally declare that you're getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and your head is above the clouds and you're huge. And then, once you do that, you make yourself a couple hundred feet tall, you have no problem bringing your consciousness down, all the way down to your bottom. No problem at all. And once you can do that, then you bring it back up to the Hesed, up to the third eye, and you can project it. Oh, boy, you can just project it. Boom, you send it out anywhere you want. And now, we do a version of this technique when we're sitting at the altar in the temple, and we either do this, we have an advanced path working for higher spheres on the tree, where we have a very nice little kind of a ibis boat, and we make ourselves really, really big sitting on the stools, huge, and the altar top becomes like the top of a great big building, and then the boat sits out there and on the top of the altar, and we make our little spirit bodies. We make our little spirit bodies about 2 inches tall, and we put our consciousness into them, and we let them go running off our tongue like a bouncing off a diving board, and then they go over to the top of the altar, run across the top of the altar, get on the boat, and the boat's about 30 feet long at this point, and the boat spreads its wings, and off we go. And we're off to do a path working. And now, you can do the same thing. With an Enochian pyramid, if you want to do, you know, scrying on Enochian pyramids. In fact, this is the method of choice. You make an Enochian pyramid, and it's truncated, of course, at the top. It's got a letter up top. And then inside the pyramid, you have a sphinx. And the sphinx is a kind of a composite talismanic image kind of a thing, and it's a little cardboard, you know, little sphinx. And this pyramid is made up from a square on an Enochian tablet. Now, I may have told this story before, but I'll tell it again to illustrate the point. Frater Apollinaeus has passed on. Frater Apollinaeus wanted to go to this galactic council that he wanted to go to, and he had determined that one of the squares on one of the Enochian tablets was right lined up with where this council was going to be, way out past the Pleiades or somewhere like that. And so I made the pyramid up based upon his calculations, what square it was. I made the pyramid up, and I had a sphinx inside it. We put the pyramid up there on the altar. We sat around and looked up at the pyramid, and we made ourselves very, very, very big and very, very, very big. And then we closed our eyes, and we had our little spirit bodies jump off, you know, onto the top of the altar, and we went across, and we went into the pyramid. And, of course, the pyramid was, by this time, as big as a room, you know. Went in there, said hello to the sphinx, and then looked up at that Enochian letter on the top of the trunk, and then we projected through it. And we went way, 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 way out, like a thought. What I was saying was just like a rocket, way, way out into space. And sure enough, we visited the Galactic Council. Well, Apollonius, well, he spent time talking to the, you know, the purple people with the silver hair, and he was, you know, he was getting along and talking to the about the reptilians and the, you know, and all of that. And but me, my experience, I know this sounds kind of funny, but it wasn't funny at all. I'm looking across this big onyx table, conference table, and across from me is a praying mantis in a hooded robe, and this praying mantis is about 9 feet tall, and the big ones, of course, are female, and this praying mantis is looking at me. She's looking at me from across the table, and I'm looking at her, and she says, in my mind, she says, "We are the dominant species on your planet." And I just sat there, and I said, well, I don't have a problem with that. And that was it. And so I said, John's, you know, Polynesis, his vision was different than mine completely. But oh boy. But I thought about mine when I got back, and I thought, ooh, ooh, yeah, they are. The insects really will. The insects will be here after we're gone, and they really, probably in their own way, they really are the dominant species of the planet. But this method of making yourself very, very big, that enables you to take this consciousness point and just go off with it, do things with it. Now, another way where you don't necessarily need to make yourself that big is using the tattvas. When you can use the elemental tattvas from nature's finer forces. Don't bother buying that book. I did. I got the book finally, but well, I guess it's okay if you're really into translated Sanskrit. But the tattvas are these elemental symbols, and what we do, and of course you've seen this in the Rites of Magic video, we'll put one of these tattvas up on the mirror. And then we'll get down in a ground star configuration inside the circle, looking up at the mirror, and we'll use the tattva as a doorway. And we'll do hypnotic induction and get everybody completely relaxed, and then, you know, count down to a hypnotic state, and then declare. Now, this is something you got to remember whenever you do this. Always open the gate, open the portal. Don't even your subconscious mind and your consciousness point's just not going to go anywhere unless you tell it it can. The gate's open. Go, you know. The gate's open. Okay, I can go. And so your consciousness point goes right through that pot. They work very well as doorways. And then, you close your eyes, and then you see the tattva because you've been staring at it all that time, and it's a color reflex. So, obviously, you know, it's a flasher. So you're going to go, and you go through it, and then, you know, if it's a path working, you got the path working leader narrating for you, and he takes you to the different attention points. Now, I remember, you know, when we were discussing path workings, I mentioned that the path working system really is the thing that's important about it is attention points. When you're on a path working, you're taken to a certain feature or an entity or a feature or a plant, an animal, some particular feature, symbolic feature, that's going to give you a special message for yourself. That's what's important about path workings. They're not just a guided tour of something on the astral. That's not the idea. Let's face it, we can't compete with Disneyland, and we certainly can't compete with a good movie. So if you're going to do this, do it for a purpose. But path workings are very, very vivid. Oh, boy, are they vivid. I remember the first time Apollonius took me on one of her poles, path workings, it just it really blew me away, and I said, we've got to catalyze this. I used Gareth Knight's two-volume set, the guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism, Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism, and we came up with our path workings based on that. Now, let's talk a little bit about the Enochian Aether System. The Enochian Aether System was originally this was developed by Dean Kelly to control the politics of the world. Oh boy, they had these four elemental tablets plus the little tablet of union that unifies them, and these are like crossword puzzles. You know, they're acrostics or like Kameas, if you know what that if they are, and you could draw all these different sigils out of the tablets, which were all alphanumeric, and you could draw these sigils, and these were the governors, and they applied this to a map of the world. So they had governors who could control the political situation in just about any country in the world. So this was their system. Well, D, of course, John D was 007, as you probably remember, working for Queen Elizabeth and the Secret Service. They tried to sell this to the Crown Prince of Poland, and Lasky, I believe his name, but he wasn't interested in it. But that's what it was originally developed for. Now, yeah, I understand though that the Enochian tablets, even though they are all the fire signs are in the fire tablet, and all the air signs are in the air tablet, and all the earth signs are in the earth tablet, and the water signs are in the water tablet. They're kind of fractured that way, but they still, regardless of that, they are still a bug eye on the universe. So they're supposed to be the four watchtowers at the four quarters of the universe, and you can, like we did when we went to the Galactic Council, you can figure out how to use them to access anywhere in the universe, the celestial sphere. You use them that way too. Well, at a certain point, and no, I don't know when or how, but at a certain point, long after Dee had passed away, somebody, and I don't think it was Tom Rudd, somebody decided to use them to access the inner planes or the higher states of consciousness. The end result of this was that our old friend Aleister Crowley took an impressionable young man and as his pet monkey and put a leash on him, and the two of them walked across the desert in Morocco, and Crowley had a large topaz along with this poor Newberg as an organ grinder's monkey, and off they went across the desert, and Crowley proceeded to scry all of these aethers. Now, he scried them, and he wrote a magnificent, probably his best book by far. It's called The Vision and the Voice. If you can get a copy of it, especially if you can get a copy of it with Regardi's notes, and get a hold of it if you can. It's just beautiful. And he scried all these, and he scried them as ascending the planes or the states of consciousness all the way from the etheric plane all the way up through the astral, all the way up through the mental, and all the way up through the spiritual. All the way, the lowest one was called Teyats, spelled Tex, and the highest one is Lile, spelled Lil. So we go from Tex to Lil, okay? Anyway, ever since Crowley did that, we've been using them in that fashion as a way of going from the lowest of the plains and going all the way through to the most rarefied of the spiritual realms. Now, interestingly enough, these 30 aethers do replicate to some degree Valentinian's second century Gnostic theory of 30 aeons, which is also Marcus's theory of 30 aeons. And so there is a relationship to the aeons of Gnosticism. Now, what we do now, although Crowley scribed them in this topaz, we now travel them in the spirit vision. And here's how we do it. You've seen, I think, in our Rites of Magic video, you've seen Frater Roland do this really nice watchtower opening and all that. We have this great big amethyst ball that sits on top of a sigil and then we got the tablets up around it and we open by watchtowers. And then we sit and we read the call of the 30 aethers, both in English and Enochian, and we've called out the governors and whatever. And then we close our eyes after the chant, Zakaro Zamran, Oduki Kleka, Zorge Labzirdo Nokomat, Hoat Yaida. And that goes on and on and on, and the incense rises, and then we close our eyes, and we project our consciousness point into that big ball, and in there is the aether, and then we experience the aether, meet the governors, and experience that. So that is actually traveling in the spirit vision. And then we come back out and give you our circles and whatever, and that's how we do it. So we can go all the way up now. Second degree people, they work the first seven, and then above that, it's inner order people work them higher than that. And as they go, I mean, you can add, these aethers are just really, really a marvelous experience. I remember one time I got into one of them and according to what we were supposed to find in the aether, there was one of the quadrants was they taught you nonverbal communication, and here was this great big onyx lion, big like a sphinx, a big lion sitting there, and he was all black, and I looked up at the lion and I said, okay, teach me nonverbal communication. And bap, I was inside the lion looking down at myself saying, teach me nonverbal communication. So yeah, you can have a lot of very interesting experiences on the aethers, and that is certainly a good but you could you could do them like Crowley, and you could scribe them and leave your consciousness point in your head, if you want to. You can do it either way. But when you travel in the spirit vision, then it is a 3D effect. You're in the middle of it. Okay, we're just about out of time, and next week we're going to see if we can do a show on the Kybalion. And we got a request to talk about the Kybalion. So we're going to try to do a show on the Kybalion, and we'll maybe have a very special guest, I hope we will, to call in on that one. Anyway, we will see you next week, and meanwhile, good magic.